You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Welcome to Mystery Crate, everybody. My name is Roy Bellamy, and in the Zoom is Chris Rendenham, Billy Gill, Jessica Smetana, and Chris Cody. What the hell are we doing, guys?
What the hell was that pronunciation of Smetana?
Smetana. Yeah. That was a Chicago. That was my Chicago accent.
It was like you were doing the Da Bears commercial, guys, and pronouncing it. Those guys have names, right?
What's the most Chicago thing that I say? Have you guys picked up on it? Because I know what it is.
What is it?
Oh, there are several things that bring out the, oh my God, that's one that you do.
That's it. That's it, Woody. You got it. Nailed it.
It's anything with long A. Calendar. I hear like a calendar every now and again. Long A's. Long A's, I hear them a lot. I try not to pick up on and make you self-conscious, but I hear it a lot.
Can we tell the audience about your calendar issues that keep happening behind the scenes?
Oh my. Okay, oh boy. I'll explain. So my calendar is somehow defaulting to the Levitard show calendar. So I keep putting things in my calendar and it's showing up on the show calendar. So I've had like doctor's appointments and reservations at restaurants and like phone calls and like all of this stuff in the show calendar. And then Billy and Mike will be like, I see you're getting dinner at such and such on Saturday. And I'm like, it's so embarrassing.
It seems like you got rid of it though. I don't see it here anymore, which I guess is a good thing. But we knew where you were going to dinner on Saturday night. It's like, this isn't supposed to be here. I think the first time that got abused that I know of, I think Mike put in the calendar like some shoe release was coming out, some Nike shoe release.
Oh, I remember
and we're looking
that.
At it, we're going, what the hell is that? Is that a guest? Who is that? And it was like some Nike release, and he wanted to make sure he was in the sneakers app in time.
Well, and it was one of those things that no one wanted to ask. You're like, did we miss something? Like, are we supposed to know what's going on? I think he's going to be on vacation. Is this a guest that he booked? Does anybody know? And everybody assumed someone else knew what was going on. And then like eventually we looked it up and it was like, oh no, these are like Shooter McGavin special edition shoes that are being
released.
That's
exactly what it was. Yeah. And the funny, like, we have a bizarre workflow in that we don't just ask, hey, what is this? We go, oh, well, that person must know, and that person must know. Like, there's like a series of assumptions that lead to mass confusion instead of just going, hey, Mike, what is this?
I'm dying to find out how Jess's Banana Republic call goes. I'm not going to lie. Like, she may have taken it off of the show calendar. I put it on my own personal calendar, like, check in and see how this call goes.
Guys, there is such a good backstory to that, but I can't say it. I can't say it on air. Like, there's too much shame and sadness involved, but the backstory is really good. I promise one day when I get over this current dilemma that I'm in, I will tell everyone, and it is depressing.
Speaking of sadness, my dad's bowling game is terrible.
Oh boy.
Oh, I don't believe that.
Can't be worse than mine.
That's true, Roy. That's probably true.
I mean, you didn't have to agree with me. I'm just saying.
I imagine, Roy, that you bowl a straight ball and you throw it really hard.
I do.
Yeah.
With a heavy ball too.
I'm with him as well. I don't know how to do the curving thing. The really? Wrist turn. I can't do it. Oh. I mean, I'm sure if I was taught I could, but I cannot.
Roy, why would you go with the heavy ball if you can't really control it? Like, why don't you just go with a lighter ball that maybe you have a little bit more, you know, like leeway with, a little more looseness? Why do you have to go? Is this like a thing where you like go and you're like, I need everybody to see that I'm grabbing the heaviest ball on the rack?
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely like is embarrassing if you like. Well, first off, there's also the dilemma of how big your fingers are, because the smaller you're going, like there isn't big enough grips if you're going too small. So that's a concern. But also, yeah, like you don't want to grab the smallest ball. I don't know. I guess it's.
I have long, but my fingers are kind of thin. I think not as big as Chris or Billy's. I don't think.
Damn right.
Woody
or Woody's.
You do index
or Jessica's
middle thumb. On the bowling ball? I'm kind of seeing how you were kind of gripping.
Oh, index, middle, thumb, yeah.
Oh, no. I do the two middle and then the thumb, and then I have like the Texas Longhorn situation
Same.
Going on
Same.
Outside.
Horns down or horns up?
I don't know.
Oh, it's this? So it's middle ring thumb. That's how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, and then you kind of like balance it in between the pinky finger and then the like index.
No wonder
finger.
You're terrible, Woody.
You would think that, you know, before they give you a very heavy object to hurl towards a set of bowling pins, that they would teach you how. But it really is kind of a figure it out as you go. I never learned proper technique. I was never coached on how to. There's a lot of things that, as in life, we just get chucked into the deep end on, and you just figure out how to bowl. Here's this heavy object, throw it.
Figure out how to be a parent. Yeah.
So how does axe throwing work? Has anyone here gone axe throwing? Like, is there like an intense? Well, no, because I'm wondering. Like, so he's right.
That's another thing. Yeah,
you're throwing like a 15 pound stone, basically, like a rounded stone down like this wooden lane, and it's like, well, hopefully you don't kill anybody, which you shouldn't, because no one should be over there. But like axe throwing is the same thing. Do they just give you like four axes and it's like, all right, go knock yourself out, try to hit a bullseye?
Never been, but I think they give you like a little tutorial. I think they show you how to do it so that you don't accidentally hack your own head off.
And then two shots of whiskey and then you're good to go.
I feel like any activity for leisure that involves maybe chopping your own head off is not an activity for leisure. Just, you know, I
went to a gun range and they didn't do any tutorials. Luckily, I already
really?
Knew how to
use Jesus.
Guns. Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, I already knew.
There's just an assumption
that
you know how to work a gun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Luckily, you already knew.
Luckily, I already knew.
My dad is a really good bowler, segueing back to bowling. And his average is like a 185 or something like that.
Wow.
Like, he's pretty good. He almost bowled a 300 once. I think he ended up bowling a 299.
Oof,
he almost had a perfect
wow,
game. The
pressure got to him.
Wow. Yeah, he missed one pin on the last frame.
That's
and
devastating.
It is like, I think, his greatest shame that I am not as good of a bowler as he is, because he is phenomenal.
That is about 272 points better than me.
Your best game is a 22?
Just about.
27?
It can't be.
That's impossible.
Right?
If it's that low, you'd put the bumpers out. Like, yeah. you wouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
The lowest you can do is like a 58, right?
Yeah, I would never put those bumpers out.
Really?
No.
Why?
There's a lot of gutter balls that accidentally hit the 1 or 10 pin. Or the 7 or 10 pin.
That's how you bowl a 22, I guess. Yeah.
But that's sad. No, you get the bumpers out if you're that bad. Like, just at that point, what's the point of the activity? Just to be miserable? Like, just throw it straight out of play every time?
You ever get the little slide where you roll the ball down the slide?
Yeah. You ever do that?
Yeah. No.
Oh, why not?
Wow, he set us up there.
Yeah, those are for like 10 or under.
Now, we're discussing bowling because we have an upcoming guest that is a professional bowler, but Chris has also begun operating in a bowling league.
Well, it is
where a
beer
league.
I presume beer is consumed. Yes. Tell us, Chris, about your bowling exploits.
You know, my first league ever, 10 weeks in. Or what, are you laughing at exploits there?
Nah, you know.
I'm doing okay. I started off the season. It's a 10-week season. I'm doing week 10 tonight. I started out really well, and I haven't bowled good in 3 weeks. I've been struggling to break 120 the last few weeks after I went, like, I was over 170 for a few weeks in a row, and I'm just all over the place. Too many beers, probably.
Where does 120 put you, like, in regards to the other bowlers in your league?
Well, like with handicaps, everybody ends up being around the same, but our team has really high handicaps. We're like, we have the least amount of scratch pins in the entire league. Like, everyone on my team has like a 70 handicap, 60, 80, and there's a bunch of teams with a bunch of like scratch bowlers who get like 10 pins, but then they are really good. So that's why we lose no matter what.
You know, one of the worst parts of social bowling is the eating. Yeah, is the eating. Because like, if you go get wings or you get pizza or whatever, then it's kind of like, am I going to wash my hands? Because you want to wash your hands, right? Whenever it is that you go.
You got to eat with your pinky and your forefinger, right? Because the other ones go in the ball. You just got to go like chopsticks.
Or just
like,
you left, like, you know, right hand bowling, left hand eating. That's kind of the way I do it.
I would never trust bowling alley food. That just seems, it's below strip club food.
Well, what?
It seems bad.
Why?
It just seems seedy and just disgusting.
Seedy?
Yeah. Scurrilous accusation.
You love seeds. You used to have a cup where you just eat every day sunflower seeds, and you had a spit cup in the studio. You guys remember that in the old studio, Roy's spit cup? That was kind of, I'm not going to lie, that was weird. As an intern, I remember seeing like there's this guy here and he just kept spitting into a cup. I'm like, what is going on here? How is this like a professional environment?
Why are you bringing up old shit? Professional environment?
Yeah, spit cups don't seem like something that happens.
Crazy? What show you think you were working on?
I mean,
I don't know. I used to put on pants to show up. That was, for me, was a professional environment.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
Talked about masturbating to Cher today, guys, because I don't know if we have any like moral high ground to stand on.
Right. Yeah. Stand.
Or an elephant.
So Erin McCarthy is a professional bowler, and she joined Billy, my dad, and myself, and we had a fun conversation about bowling, but she's also a nurse. So she's been kicking ass, obviously, the last few years. So we talked to her about all of that.
Yeah. Yes, I knew that was coming.
So here it is.
Cass.
We are celebrating. Saturday is International Bowling Day. And what better person to have on than Erin McCarthy of the Professional Women's Bowling Association. I want to talk to you about what it's like to be a professional bowler, but your other job is probably more important. You're a critical care nurse in the time of COVID. So we want to ask you about that too. And thanks for all you're doing on that end of it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Obviously, being a professional bowler, and you're successful when you've won a couple of PWBA titles, I think, but do you make a good living being a bowler, if you don't mind me asking?
I think I'd make a better living if I did it 100% of the time. But like you said, I basically balance my life between two different professions.
Right.
So if I devoted 100% of it, there are women that they definitely make a living doing bowling. But I kind of like my job back home, having the health insurance and the benefits as an extra perk too. So it kind of alleviates some pressure for me as well. You know, I'm not so focused on getting that paycheck every single week, which I think kind of helps me in the long run. So I like balancing between the two.
What is it like on tour when you are bowling? Do you like travel by plane, by car? Do you pay for your own hotels, or is that paid for by sponsors? Like, I know nothing about the lifestyle of a pro bowler.
Yeah, so we have our sponsors that help us with jerseys and equipment and bags and that sort of thing. And then on the PWBA tour, we have a semi-truck that takes our equipment from city to city. So we don't have to worry about transporting our bowling balls. Bowling is a lot like golf. We don't just have one or two balls. We have anywhere from 9 to 20 bowling balls out on tour. They do different types of things.
Jeez.
Because a lane pattern is also kind of like a golf course. I don't know. People follow golf a little bit more than they follow bowling, so it's an easier analogy. But you know, you can have different volumes and lengths of oil patterns, which dictate which bowling balls you use. So that helps with that. And then in terms of travel, I fly to most places unless I can drive. A reasonable amount of time for me is probably 8 or 9 hours, just so I can get back for work if I needed to get back for work. And then each of us kind of have our own either roommate or groups of people that we've just stayed with over the past couple of years since the relaunch of the women's tour back in 2015. We kind of split costs with that. And then, you know, if it's considered a business for tax purposes and whatnot, that's just kind of what we do. So we do pay for our travel and our expenses and whatnot, but our sponsors help us with the equipment and that sort of thing.
Do bowlers have the equivalent of a golf caddy? Do you have somebody with you assisting, like telling you, geez, the lanes are really oily today, you need to use this ball instead of that ball?
We do have, they're called ball reps. They're sometimes they're doing more than what they were originally intended to do. They're not only an extra set of eyes that kind of help us see the lane and see different types of, I guess, things that we need to do to score better, if you will. But they've also kind of been an emotional support person for many people out on tour as well. They weren't originally made to do that. They're just supposed to be there to help be an extra set of eyes. But you become pretty close to them, and you bounce ideas off of them, and you talk when you're off the lanes too, and they become friends almost in a way.
Now, I don't know if you're in the market for a new one, but I am a Thursday night bowling league bowler, you know. And, you know, I got like a 170, 175 average. I only have one ball right now in the arsenal. I'm working on getting 9. But and I don't want to just turn this into, hey, can you make me a better bowler? But the Brooklyn, which is like for you, I'm a bowling guy. That's why I know what that's called. Why don't you describe what a Brooklyn is, actually?
Yeah, so if you're a right-hander, Brooklyn would be hitting basically the left-hander's pocket.
Yeah.
And if you're a left-hander, the Brooklyner crossover would be hitting the right-hander's pocket.
Now, do we look down on the Brooklyn? Like, you don't ever get a Brooklyn, right?
No, we get Brooklyns out on tour. Sometimes it's embarrassing. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's laughable. It kind of just depends on the situation. I think if you're going head-to-head with a person and you throw a Brooklyn to go ahead in the match or the game, it's a little bit embarrassing, but at the same time, you're like, well, at least it happened to me instead of, the other person.
First of all, I've bowled with the other gentleman in the Zoom right now, and I would bet big money that he is not averaging 175 in his bowling league.
I meant every two games. If you add up my scores and combine them, I'm averaging 175.
Okay. Right. Now, Aaron, I think I saw in the stats you're averaging more like 215, which is, imagine that being your average. My best game in my entire life, and I'm old, was a 222. So to average 215 is unfathomable.
How many perfectos you got there, Aaron?
I am not very good at keeping track.
Oh, God. I would
be between 20 and 30.
Yeah, wow. I'm somewhere around there, too.
Wait a minute. You have bowled between 20 and 30 perfect games?
I think so. You'd be surprised that I would say that I'm on the lower end of
really?
No professional bowler has not bowled a perfect game, correct?
There might be a couple of them out there. Just had bad luck on the 10th frame or the 12th frame, I guess, technically speaking. But yeah, there's probably a couple out there that haven't had one.
What is the pressure like in that 10th frame? Like, do you still get that pressure, or have you bowled so many that like it doesn't really affect you?
I think it depends on the situation. Like in a professional event, I still get the nerves and I still want that 300. It's a little bit more prestigious at that level. In league, I don't get quite as nervous anymore. You always have like a different type of feeling, you know, going for 300, but it's not quite as anxiety ridden and feeling.
Aaron, when you, I don't imagine this happens very often with a bowler of your caliber, but when you do have the rare 7-10 split, is that something you actually expect to convert, or is that nearly impossible even for a pro?
No, it's pretty impossible. It's all luck. There's people that do make it, and it's kind of weird. Like if you go center to center, some of the pins like to kind of bounce out of the back almost, which is where people kind of get lucky in making the 7-10. But it's the statistics. I don't have them, but they're very low on converting the spare.
Tell us about your nursing career, how that happened and what you're involved with exactly. I understand you're a critical care nurse, but I'm not 100% sure what that means.
Yes, so I work at two different hospitals. My primary job is at Nebraska Methodist Hospital here in Omaha. And then I also work at Nebraska Medicine, which is right down the road. And I at Methodist, I work in what's called an acute care position. So I float between the emergency department, intensive care unit, and progressive care. It's kind of wherever they need me for that particular shift. And then at Nebraska Medicine, I work in their medical intensive care unit. So I see a lot of very sick patients. And fortunately, unfortunately, I'm not sure which one you want to go with, but in 2020, both of the units that I primarily worked on flipped to COVID only units. So that was pretty much my focus for all of 2020 and the majority of the starting of 2021. You know, much like my coworkers, we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. You don't know. You don't ever expect that you're going to be in the middle of a pandemic caring for the sickest of the sick. But that's, kind of what I've been doing for the past year and a half. And then I've been at Methodist since 2014 and Nebraska Medicine since 2017.
I would imagine that being a critical care nurse in normal circumstances can be an emotional roller coaster. But in the time of COVID, that's just magnified. Is yours a job that can be both uplifting and heartbreaking? It strikes me that there must be all kind of emotional highs and lows from what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially over the past, since COVID has occurred. You know, before COVID, you'd have families that would come into the hospital that would visit their loved ones. You could communicate directly with them. And there would be success stories where, super sick patients that you would think wouldn't be able to walk out of the hospital, they do get to leave the hospital. And then COVID kind of changed everything. You know, you couldn't have visitors. You were communicating via iPads. Oftentimes the patients that I cared for were on ventilators, so they couldn't communicate themselves. They were super sick. And, you'd have to tell families over the phone that, their loved one might not make it, but they couldn't necessarily come to the hospital just because of the times that we were in. So I think that was the most difficult thing, is just using an electronic device to explain the severity and the scenarios of what was going on. You know, that's not what we do as nurses. We're people type people, you know, we're used to talking face to face and, you know, showing empathy and sympathy, and to have to do that over an iPad or over a telephone, it changed everything.
Transitioning back to a little bit more of the fun here. Now, when you're bowling in the PWBA, give me the top three reasons that not necessarily you, just bowlers get mad at each other during a game. Like unwritten rules, like are there issues like this? Or are you guys all such pros that you don't really cross lines?
There's not a ton of issues at the level that we're at. I would say, like, I guess if you get irked off or mad, it'd be if other bowlers are getting pretty lucky breaks and you're just having one of those days, you know, that's frustrating. You don't want to let it be frustrating, but it is. Sometimes people can be pretty slow and just slow the entire pace of competition down. That can be frustrating depending on how you're bowling for the day. But I would say those are probably two of the biggest ones. Otherwise, we're pretty much on the same page and pretty professional on that type of thing.
Well, just us a couple bowlers talking here. What really makes me angry on Thursdays is when old Doris over here, the lane next to me, starts moving a little too forward when I'm still at, like, you know, in my... See, I don't even know if you guys have... Do you guys even have the ball returns, or do the balls just, like, float down in front of you?
I wish they floated down in front of us. Okay. We do have the ball returns, but we have a very... it's a specific, you know, when you're in league, it's expected that it's one lane courtesy. So if you're up the rule, the person next to you is not bowling to the right or to the left.
That's what I'm trying to say, Aaron. Yeah. And it, you know, yeah. Doris over here doesn't really abide by these rules.
Yeah. Fortunately, on the professional tour, we do abide by all of those rules. I haven't had many instances where that type of thing has happened. So
I'm watching you, Doris.
So you're a professional bowler, and yet you bowl in local leagues with people who average 100 pins less a game than you do?
She probably just used to.
No, I actually still bowl in league. I don't bowl full time because it's hard between my traveling and...
But that's where the handicap comes in. I don't mean to interrupt you, but like she would get no pins and someone who bowls a 120 would get 90 pins. So it becomes like an even... You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure Aaron is still dominating out there. I'm just saying that's what the whole handicap situation is for. Dad, you used to be a league bowler. What's happened? What's wrong? You forgot how it works?
I haven't league bowled in years. But anyway, you must be the ringer then, right? Like every team in the league wants you on their team.
So I actually bowl with people that I've grown up with and I've known for probably 15 to 20 years. So they're, I would say, an equal caliber as far as averages go. We actually have one, it's called a scratch league. So no one in the league gets handicapped. So everyone is on the same level playing field.
I should join a scratch league.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd get buried in a scratch league, by the way.
Are there any tour spots coming down to Florida anytime soon? Because my Thursday night team, yeah, we have some weak links.
Not this year, hopefully next year.
Well, you know, we'll stay in touch. And, you know, yeah,
sounds good.
I think you could probably crack the team. I'm not sure, but I'll get back to you.
I'll give it a go.
Okay. Aaron, we're celebrating International Bowling Day, which is Saturday.
Are. How do bowlers celebrate International Bowling Day?
Well, I mean, you got to go bowling.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's one of the dumbest questions I've ever asked.
It always struck me that women bowlers and male bowlers should be equal. Like, is that the case, or is it a strength thing where the men just have a natural advantage?
So we actually throw the same weight of bowling balls for the most part. Most of the women throw 15. There are a couple, one or two, that actually throw 16 pounds. That's not super common on the men's tour either, though. The normal weight, or average weight, I should say, is 15 pounds. But in terms of strength, you know, the men obviously have more power. So they can do different things with the bowling ball, unlike the women. And then I think in terms of like sponsorships and viewership and whatnot, I think if you were to compare men's sports to women's sports across the board, not just with bowling, they, you know, fortunately, unfortunately, seem to get more publicity, more sponsorships. That's just kind of how it is at this time. You know, one day, hopefully it's equal across the board. But right now, that's just not the case, unfortunately.
What's a typical ball speed for a pro like yourself? 15, 20 miles an hour? What do you throw?
Most of the women, myself, I throw anywhere between 15 and 16 miles per hour. I would say the average for women range anywhere between 13 and 18 miles per hour. And then on the men's tour, it's anywhere from, I would say, 15 up to 20, 21 miles per hour, depending on what they're bowling on.
How often are you using the little air conditioning thing on the ball return?
Pretty frequently. It gets really hot when you're bowling. Spectators are normally freezing, and then the rest of us are just sweating. So,
what would be the effect if you wanted to establish yourself as the hardest throwing professional bowler on the planet, and all of a sudden you just started throwing like a 28 mile an hour ball,
like a 7 pound ball?
Yeah, like a feather light ball that would just 30 miles an hour down the lane.
I think I'd need a new arm for starters.
I've always wondered that. I don't know why.
You've not always wondered that. I'm calling BS on that. I think
I've wondered that too, Aaron, honestly. Like, is there more value? Because I guess if everybody throws around the same speed, like, what if you just became the hardest throwing bowler?
And your
average goes lower, right? But you get like the notoriety of like, oh my God, like Aaron throws 30 miles an hour. Like, she'll bowl a 120, but throws 30 miles an hour. Is there value to that?
I guess it just depends on who wants to follow it along.
How do we feel about midnight bowling, music playing with bowling, party atmospheres around bowling?
Graceful.
Wow. See, I'm a fan of it. I like the louder the music, the better. How do we feel about this, Aaron?
I don't mind the music, but I guess if I'm just bowling for fun, mm-hmm. that's fine. But it's hard for me to bowl for fun now.
Yeah.
If my friends say, hey, do you want to go cosmic bowling on a Friday night? I'd probably say I'll go to watch. Probably won't be throwing any balls down the lane, though.
What could you bowl opposite handed?
Maybe a 100 average. Not
impressive.
I could probably hit some pins, but my spare shooting would be very subpar.
Aaron, I'm terrified by single pin spares because to me that's when all the pressure is on. If you have a single pin spare 100 times, how many times out of 100 will you make that single pin spare?
I would hope it's above 90%. I think single pin spares in bowling are much like free throws in basketball. They just should be made. Obviously, sometimes they're not made, but you should have, you know, ideally a 95% spare average for single pins or better.
Even that 10th pin? So even that 10th pin? I hate that 10th pin.
Yeah, I throw a lot of us throw plastic balls at the 10 pins.
Yeah, what? I do too. No, I do too. Yeah, us good bowlers do. Yeah, we do that.
Plastic ball, what does that mean?
So if you were to go into a bowling center and pick up just a ball off the rack, like a house ball that the center provides, there's no weight block in the center of the bowling ball, so it won't hook. So it should ideally go dead straight towards the pin.
That's why I'm not better.
Wow. I mean, I can make a house ball hook a little bit, Aaron.
You know what I hate, Greg? I hate when there's two pins left, but it looks like there's one pin left.
Yes.
Think that you got the one pin and then surprise, there's another one hiding behind it.
That's the worst. What's the worst? What is the worst? What's your top three worst? That's the worst in bowling.
So do you know the pins pretty well?
I do, but you should tell them.
Okay, so a 3, 6, 9, 10. It's basically the three pins on the side, but then you have the one pin behind it, like he was talking about. I think that's a bowler's worst nightmare shoot during competition, I think.
So you've had nightmares about that?
The spare percentage is just low. It's not where it should be. that's probably my most feared spare.
Is there any way to carry your skills over to skee ball? Have you tried skee ball at all?
I have tried skee ball. I like skee ball. I'm mediocre at it. I'm not the greatest. You'd think I should be better.
It's the ramp, though. The ramp really throws things off. Like, if there was that ramp in bowling, I bet you wouldn't be doing as well because you can't really predict the ramp.
No, you're correct.
Skee-ball?
Oh,
you don't know skee-ball?
The arcade, Dad. It's the arcade version with the circles. You roll the ball.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I didn't know what it was called.
Yeah.
Dad, before we let Aaron go, I think you're very proud of your bowling form. So I think you should, like, back up from your chair and show her, like, you know, just a dry run. That's what we call it, right, Aaron? Give her a dry run of a swing and let her evaluate it.
Okay, well, I'm wearing basketball shorts right now. I'm not really
They're always blue.
Unprofessional blue. Attire, yeah. But...
imagine that, they're blue. All right.
It's not a bad setup.
Yeah, I mean, what is he? Hold it, see?
There was like a double thing.
Yeah, he did a false start there. He was nervous. The pressure got to him. That was
the most embarrassing thing I've ever done in my life. But you know what the key to me, Aaron, is the exaggerated arm thing after the
follow
release.
Through in the in oh, the
yeah.
What would you rate that on a scale of 1 to 10?
Give him about a 7.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Wow, a professional bowler has given me a 7. That's on my tombstone. Put it on there.
Aaron, one last question. Would you rather get a turkey or 4 strikes out of 5, but it's broken up, but you have a spare in the middle? Because I feel like there's something to a turkey that I just like.
Yeah, no, I'd rather have the turkey.
Yeah, same. Sure. I also prefer house bowling shoes over like actual bowling shoes because I like the feeling of sliding, where I feel like if you get like your own personal bowling shoes, you don't have that same slide. Why is that?
I think it's because the bowling shoes you get from the bowling alley, they're used, they're broken in. So the more you use them, the more slippery they get on the bottom. So they make you slide more. Mm.
I guess you don't like the slide.
No, I don't.
Sorry. I can do the moonwalk good in house bowling shoes.
Oh,
okay. Aaron, how did this go for you? Did was this okay?
Yeah, this was fun.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Aaron.
Bye.
The playoffs have started in basketball and hockey, and there's really only one way that I can enjoy it. For me, drinking Miller Lite while the action is going on makes the game that much more exciting and that much more delicious. A lot has changed over the years, but one thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. So what do you look for in a light beer? Great taste or less filling? For me, it's great taste and less filling. Miller Lite keeps it simple. Undebatable quality, great taste, and only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes like beer. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right at your door, visit MillerLite.com/crate, C-R-A-T-E. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Roy, I'm going to go on the record and say that you've never bowled a turkey.
Wow. 3 strikes in a row? No.
Yeah, see? That's sad. That makes me sad that you've never had a turkey.
Oh, don't feel bad for me. I'm better in other things.
Like what?
I can't think of anything right now, but when I think of something, I'll get back to
Vacationing?
You. Vacationing? 2 years. Vacationing. I haven't had a vacation I don't know how long, so I wouldn't know.
How are you as a vacationer, Roy? What is your vacation like? Because coming up, Mike's going to tell us about one of his vacations. Yeah. But what is a vacation, Roy, like? Because I feel like maybe you go into it and then you may be overthinking certain things, or you may be like thinking like, well, I only have 3 days left. Oh, I really need to do this because I only have 2 days. And then you miss the whole time because you're worrying your entire vacation.
I feel like this is your vacation.
this is something that you are used to. I don't tend to worry about things when I'm not vacationing, let alone vacationing. So I think I'm good on that department. I think I just walk around. What was that?
I think your guard's up. I think you're keeping your guard up a little bit. I think you do worry about things, if I'm going to be honest.
That's just my arm on my chair.
Listen, I've heard plenty of stories, plenty of tales of you and your neighbor in a tree. So I think that there are things that worry you and bother you.
Yeah.
You know?
He tells us that story all the time. You do tell that story a lot.
I mean, the woman said... Like she said to me, I wouldn't lie to you. I'm a child of God. While lying to me, like, why would I be angry about that?
Huh. You know who else lied? Judas. He betrayed God.
That is true.
Got getting biblical here on Mystery Crate.
Mm-hmm. Getting biblical on your ass here.
I bet Roy's fun on vacation because Roy, when he gets a couple drinks in him, is a good time.
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen drunk fun Roy before, Billy?
No, I've seen of it. Like I've seen videos and pictures, but I haven't seen it in person. Like Roy's never really let his guard down around me.
Yeah.
And we shared a room.
That's because I don't like you, Billy.
We shared a room together in Atlantis. God. That's right. He was wearing shorts around me.
That's when you really know somebody, when you share a hotel room with them.
Mm-hmm.
It was awkward. I don't think I've ever seen Roy's legs before. I've only ever seen him in pants.
I don't think I've ever seen my legs.
I've seen Roy in a Speedo.
Well, yeah. Well, there's that.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
It was impressive. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes, it was. It was impressive. Yes.
That's right.
Waves in the sand. Yeah, it looked great out there. Oh, what are you talking about?
Speaking of impressive, the service that Mike got in Tulum Tulum? How the fuck do you say this place?
Why do you keep doing Tulum?
I don't know how to say
it. I used to just consistently say it wrong, and now you guys have me thinking. Like, so now I'm thinking before I say it wrong.
Tulum. You're still consistently saying it wrong.
I know, but now I'm...
No, now he's inconsistently saying it wrong. He says it Tulum or Tulum or whatever. Tulum. Tulum.
That's where Mike was, and he had some crazy shit happen to him.
Okay.
That's the setup.
Right.
Here it is.
Enjoy.
That's the setup.
So, Chris Cody, a couple of weeks ago, you were envious of my trip to Tulum.
Yeah.
Which you kept calling Tulum.
Whatever, man. That place needs to get over itself.
Tulum?
I mean, just the last year, it feels like everyone wants to go there. I had never heard of that place before a year ago.
It is IG friendly. There is no doubt about
it. Did I see you climb a ladder to go like hang? Is there like a place where you can like catch some rays, but you have to climb a ladder to get there?
There was like a Wicker Man installation. I had to climb a ladder too. there's a whole bunch of IG photo hotspots. I mean, it's not the SeaWorld in Orlando.
No, I mean, it's.
But it'll do in terms down. Of. How was SeaWorld in Orlando? I haven't asked you.
Not
since.
As sad as I thought it was going to be. It was fine. My daughter loved it. So I guess that's all that matters.
I love kids.
Yeah.
You.
You did Aquatica too, right?
Yeah. It was good, man. And I have no negative words to say about it.
But everyone was laughing at your expense.
Yeah, it's just a sad place to say you're going.
Yeah, you went on a family trip, and I celebrated my 10-year wedding anniversary with my wife. We did a getaway to
Tulum. And you were sending me pictures, just mocking me. And
yeah.
I appreciate it.
But when you drove up to Orlando, you were able to get there, right? Mm-hmm. No hiccups?
Correct.
No blockades?
No issues at the Yeehaw Junction?
No. Nope. There wasn't a blockade at the Yeehaw Junction?
Nope. Smooth sailing.
That's a good pull there, Whitty. There is, however, a story about that with me on my trip to Tulum. I put it on Twitter. There's only one road for those that have ever been to Tulum. There's one road in, one road out. And the way that it works when you go to Tulum is you go to the airport, you fly into Cancun International, and you have to get a shuttle, and you ride out for almost a 90-minute to two-hour drive to Tulum. We are about 90 minutes into this car trip, and we run into bad traffic. Now, I've never been to Tulum before, so I don't know. I think this is pretty normal. Apparently, it's not. And we were in our car for close to 3 hours.
Whoa.
And that was before we realized that we were going to be in our car a lot longer.
Imagine it's packed in there, too.
Yep. So I for those that don't know, I'm Cuban. My dad was born in Cuba, but Spanish is not my first language. So I know I can get by with Spanish, but I'm not certainly what I consider fluent. And I become very self-conscious because I don't want people to mock me when I speak Spanish. So I just kind of shut down. And I have a lot of conversations where someone's speaking to me entirely in Spanish and I just speak to them in English and we make it happen. It's not really so much an option in Mexico. I'm kind of on their ground. It's a road game for me and I have to make do. So I was able to communicate some with my driver and I hear him on the phone and he's like having a very impassioned conversation with someone on the other end of the phone. And he tells me something along the lines of someone's going to call you in Spanish. I'm like, oh, what's going on over here? This seems pretty bad.
From the hotel or just like someone is going to call you?
From the shuttle service is going to call me. So I'm trying to figure out what's happening. And then he just hands me a phone and it's someone trying to speak to me in Spanish, and I'm understanding everything that they're saying, but I'm trying to fight through. So basically what they're telling me is, sir, there is a protest. They're blocking the roads. Our driver has somewhere he needs to go to the airport and make other runs. You need to exit the vehicle now. Exit the vehicle. I'm like, wait a second. There's a protest. Where do you want me to go? I have my bags here. I'm like, I paid you to go to one place. You're telling me I have to go miles away. I don't know what I'm doing here.
How many bags?
My wife had, I had a backpack and a suitcase. Cynthia had a suitcase and a backpack. So not too many bags, but certainly not something I want to evacuate my car with in a foreign country.
And you would presume that a protest in a vacation hotspot has something to do with vacationers, right? It's a protest involving the tourism industry. And thus, you're going to be walking in the middle of a protest as a tourist One would presume, well, I mean, maybe given your complexion, you can pull off not being a tourist, but...
I could not pull off not being a tourist with a bunch of suitcases. Right,
fair enough.
And the shirt I was wearing.
So
I was very much going with a touristy vibe with
In some ways, you're crossing the picket line to get through this protest, and so I can't imagine you're thinking that you'll be terribly well-received if you start walking through it.
So I poke my head out from the car, and I could see the blockade. And sure as shit, the one road in, one road out is blocked off, talking with boulders in the streets and pieces of wood and people that don't look happy. And this is getting to be a little scary. The person calls me back 5 minutes later and like, let's go. You got to get out of the car. I'm like, let me tell you something. I am not doing anything right now. It's not fair for you to tell me to do it. I am here on my 10-year wedding anniversary. My wife is nervous. I'm not just going to go to some random hotel that's not my hotel and just be left to my own devices to figure it out. At least give me time to figure it out. So I start Googling with bad cell phone reception. I even called the U.S. Embassy.
Wow.
To try to figure out. And the U.S. Embassy, very disappointed in you. So disappointed in you. Got one person to answer my call, and you put me on hold for 30 minutes when I was operating under very tense circumstances, and I just said, bleep this, I have to figure this out. So here's the solution that I came up with. What would you do in this situation, by the way?
Go back to the airport and fly home.
You would turn around and
I'm
go home.
Done.
Which was one of the things being, because given the Delta variant, the fact that my daughter was a little sick, not with COVID, but my daughter was a little sick in the days before. There was just a lot of bad juju surrounding this trip. Like, we shouldn't be coming here at this time in history. But this the history of this trip was, we were supposed to go last year for a friend's 40th birthday to Tulum. It wouldn't have been our ideal location, especially given everything that's going on for her 10-year wedding anniversary. The way that it works is I paid everything up front, and I had to fight like a devil to just be able to keep my money and reservation. They're like, okay, we're never going to give you your money back, but you have to come inside of a year. So this was the very last week that I could have done it. And I was looking at the NBA calendar and worked out. Game 6 was the day before the whole thing started. So I was fine. Sports calendar, perfect, worked out there. Not in terms of like personal life,
mm-hmm.
because the timing of it wasn't great, but I really had to convince my wife to go on this trip. So she was going on a trip that she was slightly resenting. And now 3 hours into this trip, she's being told by someone in a foreign language that she has to evacuate. It's a million degrees.
A car in the middle of the road.
Yeah, with all her stuff.
Yeah.
So she's almost crying. And so through Spanish, I found out, guys, I'm bilingual. I don't know if you knew this about me.
How about that?
But through all this the stress, I figured out, I can speak Spanish brilliantly. It was like, you know how you read these stories about a mom that lifts a car yes. over her head to save an infant child? That's basically me with the Spanish language when I'm under stress.
Well, yeah, when you need it, you're going to utilize this skill, because otherwise you're stranded in a terrible... You're not going to be like, well, let me not try my Spanish because they might mock me. No, I need to try and communicate in this disastrous situation to get out of it. And all right, let me see how many words I have.
I was basically Jorge Ramos moderating a presidential debate in Spanish. I was so beautifully eloquent with my Spanish language. I even picked up on a like local... vocal affect. Like I was on it.
Were you using güey or yeah. you know, no mames?
I was just using Mexican slang. I know Miami Spanish. I don't know.
Right. Which, by the way, when you were saying earlier that you're on the phone with someone, I don't think people who don't speak Spanish recognize that the various kinds of Spanish, Argentinian Spanish from Spain, Mexican Spanish, other South America, like they're so different. The dialects are different. The slang is different. And so just because you understand the language doesn't necessarily, like I struggle sometimes to understand people who don't speak Colombian Spanish, because for me, it's so clear, it's understandable. I've heard it at family functions. It makes sense to me. But from other countries, it does sound different to your ear.
I can understand Dominicans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, and Colombians.
Yeah.
You put an Argentinian in front of me here, they might as well be speaking Mandarin to me. I can't understand that. And it's easier for me to understand someone if I have them in person, but if it's over the phone, they're speaking fast and I don't have body language to go with it. So I can't connect the dots sometimes because I'll pick up every third word. And if I don't have a hand gesture that goes along with it, I'm missing stuff. So
are you telling them like, can you slow down a little bit? My Spanish is okay.
Yeah, but I kind of up until like it took me a minute to warm up. But I was really struggling to find the right words initially.
Right,
so I would say tiempo, and I would say it like, it's like, why am I talking like an American ordering a Taco Bell asking for queso? I was like, tiempo, por favor. And I was like, what am I? Mike, you're Cuban. You can do this.
I go so up and down with that, particularly when I do, like, I did an MLS broadcast last night. Some guys, I'm throwing the Hispanic flourish on, and then someone's like, Francisco Calvo. And it's like, what am I doing? Like, can I pick an accent lane?
It was almost as if I'm expected to speak Spanish this way because of the shirt that I am wearing. So instead of it,
you feel like you're a tourist in a foreign land. And so it's like, well, I speak.
Tiempo, por favor.
Yeah.
Mi esposa está nerviosa. Like, I was doing that a little bit. But then I got the hang of it because I needed to negotiate a deal with my driver. Because my driver's getting straight up yelled at. They're telling him he needs to go to the airport. I'm trying to explain to him, like, where you got to go, buddy? We're kind of screwed here.
Right. You're going to go pick someone else to then drop them back off in this exact same spot.
So my driver, who was a saint, by the way, I kept calling him amigos because he told me his name. I forgot. I'm sorry. I tipped
stressful situation
very well. So we're stuck in this jam and obviously no one's on the other side of the road because no one's getting out. So my amigo, like, I'm talking to him. I'm like, can we get a little closer to see exactly, like, how bad is it? Because if I have to walk to Tulum, which from my GPS, which was struggling, the place I needed to get to was 4.5 miles away. That is a very long walk in normal circumstances. Not 100-degree weather, not carrying bags, not with my wife that is so pissed she listened to me to come to this trip. Because I'm navigating that, too.
Yeah.
Fellas, if you've ever been married, just saying.
Well, like, or even just like, I'm not married, but like dragging your friends along to something that's going poorly.
Yeah.
You feel such a weight.
I'm so invested.
Such a burden. Right, exactly.
I'm so invested in this thing working out because I had to convince you. I had to sell this. So my driver drives over a grassy median and then he puts it in reverse. And there are some oncoming cars and he's just navigating. We drive about 1.5 miles. To the blockade.
Yeah.
Like, this is legit. This is nervous. This is like grainy footage that you would see on the evening news at some remote place.
Yeah. Richard Engel is reporting live.
Yeah. Yeah. This would be a stand-up shot to a CNN correspondent wearing a khaki vest type of deal.
Yeah.
They're pretty pissed. These people are displaced. I don't know anything about the geopolitical situation and the eviction zone in Tulum, but I could gather they were being displaced from their homes. And regardless of the circumstances surrounding that, I understand they're coming from a place of frustration if they're being evicted from their homes. That's all I got out of that. But they were trying to very clearly affect the tourism industry there because that's how they'll get people's attention. Now, there was a police presence outside of the blockade, but they were letting the protesters do their thing. And I asked my driver if there was any way he could talk to some of the people and get a gauge for exactly how violent or nonviolent this protest is, because I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to walk a mile in the other direction to the nearest hotel that's probably got to be packed to the gills with tourists trying to figure out the same stuff. Part of me was already considering that because at the very least, I know I could find some other Americans maybe and maybe share some information and come to some sort of solution. We found a car, we'll all ride. So I had the person go out, my driver go out and talk to people. And meanwhile, it's just me and my wife alone. I'm still on hold with the U.S. Embassy. And then I start getting a little nervous because there are people that are looking pretty pissed off walking past the car. And I realize the keys are in the ignition. I don't know what anybody's intentions are. I lock the doors. And people are upset. I saw one car try to make it through. They threw rocks at that car. But also, I saw tourists 19-year-old Instagram models, like carrying their bags over their heads, and protesters left them alone. And so I had an hour sample of people walking past me on the sidewalk being totally unbothered by it. They only got bothered when there was a car trying to go through there. My driver confirmed this. So I'm like, okay, we're going to do this, because now we're 2.5 miles away. It's going to take me at a large part of this day. But if worse comes to worse, I can follow my GPS and I could walk to this hotel. So I bounce it off Cynthia and she's like, I'm not cool with this. I'm like, maybe there are some taxi drivers on the other side that have places to go to, and they've been totally inconvenienced by this. Maybe there's empty taxi cabs on the other side. So I send the driver out again, and he confirms there's like a 7-Eleven over there, and there's just like 7 taxi cabs parked. He didn't talk to any of them, but there's a shot here. So Cynthia and I, we look at each other, and we put our bags over our heads, and we go on our way. And I pay the driver, who I've already paid $20 just for his time, $20 American, just somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 pesos. And I'm like, can you walk with us to those taxi cab drivers? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. He feels bad for us too. And he could have been a total jerk about this. His day was ruined and he has someone that's refusing to leave the car. He was a saint about this. He even carried Cynthia's bag. And we walked to the 7-Eleven, and then your buddy Jorge Ramos over here starts negotiating some deals with some drivers that tell me they'll do it for $30 American. And I say goodbye to my driver and I'm going to another driver. And I don't know what anybody's thinking. I'm nervous. I'm already like coming at it from a point where I'm just nervous about everything. I'm just skeptical about everything because my plans have been thrown into a tizzy. But luckily, my Spanish didn't betray me. And I got into this taxi cab and we eventually got to where it is that we were going. And anytime I'll tell the story from here on out, I'll be like Leo and Blood Diamond, just like such a hero. There was one person in the protest that said, get him. And I would just turned around and I talked my way out of it with a Spanish flourish. I embedded myself with the protest. I'm basically Ethan Hunt. But it was really, really scary for a little bit. And my wife was really nervous about everything. But we got through the blockade. And then we ended up having a wonderful time. And I got the shits. But it was worth it. It was very romantic.
Yeah, the front and the rather literal back end.
Yeah.
Did not seem pleasant. But middle? Nice time?
Middle was amazing. But at that very beginning, Chris.
Yeah.
Oh my God, did I want to be in SeaWorld?
You were longing for SeaWorld?
Oh, SeaWorld. Did I want? I wanted SeaWorld in the worst way.
They give you one free beer a day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because it's an Anheuser-Busch
park. Yeah.
So it's got to be an Anheuser beer. But
you don't get it, like, they just had Yingling. Like, I think they changed what beer specifically it is, but I got a free Yingling in a little tiny cup, but that was the big perk.
Yeah. I could have used a beer at that moment, too.
Yeah.
He did offer me a beer, my driver. He did, now that I think of it.
Wow.
He had a cooler in there. He gave
also
my wife
Yingling,
a water.
Weirdly, yeah.
All right, so.
It was a Corona, but it was a tiny bottle. I'm like,
oh.
How do we have these, like, the
your
little cocktail party?
Your driver gave you Corona?
I was going to make it.
No, my driver offered me Corona, to which the antibody shut it down.
Yeah. So what part of this made you the most nervous? Because as you were telling the story, for me, I was preparing. So you're like, you're getting ready to talk to protesters in Spanish. The entire time I'm thinking, I'm formulating Spanish thoughts in my head of what I would have said. And I'm like, all right, what's that word? And what's that word? And what's that word? And I'm just struggling with the language of it.
So I was Googling phrases in my translate for when I was not necessarily sure of what it is I was gonna say. So when my driver came back to the car, I did translate a sentence in English, but then I could read Spanish fine, and I could put the right phonetics behind it. So there was one time where I had to use Google Translate once, but I already knew what it was that I was gonna ask him, and I jumped from there. But yeah, I was nervous. But oddly enough, the most nervous on that trip wasn't the blockade. It was the COVID test that I was awaiting. And I wasn't even so much worried about Mexico. I was worried about Florida because I had been in one of the COVID hotspots in the world at the time. And I didn't need a test to go there. getting there turned out to be an adventure, but I was more worried about coming back because we had a sick baby. Mm, we had to quarantine for 10 to 14 days. This does not, now's not a time for a character assassination.
I didn't say anything. I just said like, oh yeah, acknowledging that you're, that's so sad.
So we had to take a COVID test in order to come back to the United States, or so we read, because I got a bone to pick. I don't know whose policy this is, but I was told American Airlines, you needed a negative test to come back into the country. And I filled out all the COVID questionnaires. I took the COVID test. I downloaded the app in which you put, you upload your negative COVID test. My wife was really nervous about it Saturday night. We were dreading the results of this because we didn't know. We're vaccinated. We both have had it. We feel pretty confident about our antibodies, but there are a lot of people that have been careful and still test positive for the Delta variant. And I go to the airport 2 days later, knowing that I had that very stressful day awaiting these test results. And the lady at the terminal is like, oh, we're no longer requiring a negative test. What? I was like, why not?
Right. I put it all this
effort. You really should be.
Can you just look at it just to make me feel better?
I need it. I'm still carrying it around. But I do like the peace of mind of after the fact, like, for 2 months, it's like I went to the first day of training camp, and let me tell you, a lot of zip on that ball from Tua. It's like, oh, I tested negative last week. I do. It's a peace of mind thing, but the hell? We can't just have a COVID policy and be like at the gate, like, nah, we're not requiring that anymore. But we're apparently not. We're just saying we are, but we're not. And I was always kind of like, my friends told me, don't worry about the COVID test in Mexico. I'm like, what do you mean? And they would just look at me with like a wry smile. Don't worry about the COVID test in Mexico. I'm like, oh, I see what you're getting at. Because when we flew into the airport in Cancun, we were trying to find our shuttle. And they have like a whole tourism section there where people from the government pull you aside. And they act super helpful. But at the very end, they try to sell you a timeshare. But only in this case, it wasn't. I'm like, what? Why is this person being so helpful? And the whole like 10-minute pitch was just to convince us Americans to not take photos of their beaches. And if we were to go to a beach, go to this beach because the seaweed isn't bad at this time of the year. Because the seaweed is kind of bad in certain parts of.
Yeah. Was it bad in your area?
Man, my hotel was so on it. Like very early in the morning, they have the bulldozers out there, and they have like an 8-man team. Just raking it up.
Really?
Yeah.
Jealous.
Just constantly. Now, it's not the most relaxing thing in the world to see a bulldozer pass you by every now and then. But by Sunday, the ocean was pretty clear of it. And we actually got to go in the water. Also, they had this, they had military people occasionally patrolling the beach with like assault rifles.
Not terribly relaxing that. Huh.
No, and I think they're trying to project like you're safe here. It was total opposite of that for me.
Yeah.
This happened to me when I was in France for Bastille Day. Mm. They just had our military walking around the Eiffel Tower and stuff. I'm like, this is very unsettling. Am I supposed to feel more safe here? Because I don't.
That'll do it for this week's edition of Mystery Crate. Check out all the other podcasts on the Levitard and Friends Podcast Network. Stupidity, South Beat Sessions, Cinephile.
Yes,
produced.
Please. For the love of God, download that podcast.
Oh, my.
The Jim Brockmeyer podcast as well has just recently ended its run with season finale guest J.K. Simmons. Check that out as well. The Dan Levitard Show with Stu Gott's podcast as well. Check it all out. We'll talk to you next week.
Smetana.
The playoffs have started in basketball and hockey, and there's really only one way that I can enjoy it. For me, drinking Miller Lite while the action is going on makes the game that much more exciting and that much more delicious. A lot has changed over the years, but one thing that hasn't, the great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what is the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite sparked this debate in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. So what do you look for in a light beer? Great taste? Or less filling? For me, it's great taste and less filling. Miller Lite keeps it simple. Undebatable quality, great taste, and only 96 calories. It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need and holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes like beer. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right at your door, visit MillerLite.com/crate, C-R-A-T-E. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.